some fun. You only live but once, and when you're dead, you're done. So let the good time roll. I say let the good time roll. I don't care if you're young or old. You ought to get together and let the good time roll. Don't sit there mumbling, talking trash. If you want to have a ball, you got to go out and spend some cash. And let the good time roll now. I'm talking about the good times. Well, it makes no difference whether you're young or old. All you got to do is get together and let the good time roll.
Great, and I mean great, Ray Charles with Let the Good Times Roll. It's from his 1959 album, appropriately titled The Genius of Ray Charles. This is Lee's Stories. Did I say stories? this is Lee's Stories. Stories. and I'm a tree. And I'm Eutrice Lead. Yes, I am. Yes, I am a very serious person. Well, okay. Very strange, but, you know, it's part of life. You got to laugh at yourself sometime. And it is Free Your Mind Friday. We were greeted with news today that there's one, I should say, a plea of guilty coming out of the, I suppose you could say coming out of the Trump administration, but we'll see. And with the ongoing investigation into the Trump administration and people around it and in it who might have been doing some very bad things, Robert Mueller, the special counsel, scored a semi-victory today. I say semi because there's more to come, even from Robert Mueller, from the person he has dragged in his net, and that's Michael Flynn, who served as a national security advisor to Donald Trump. And he has pleaded guilty to making false statements. I like the way they say lying. Making false statements to the FBI about his conversations with... Then, let me just turn this off here for a second. Okay. My phone was on and I had no idea. Okay. Has it gone? I'm trying to... You know, when it comes to technological stuff, I mean, a simple thing like just getting a phone to be silenced, it takes a while for me to do. But Michael Flynn has decided that he would come clean, at least on this one, making false statements to the FBI about his conversations with Russian Ambassador Sergei Kislyak. During and even after the President Trump was installed. Well, what's important to note about that, I think, is that it's a very important step in what it is I think they're looking for, which is to see who made up a circle of very privileged people who were also very amenable to Russia. This is how they play the games. People capture one pawn here and the other side retaliates by capturing another pawn there, and it goes on. But there seems to be, even at the outset, there seems to be something very different about this. And I think I may be, exaggerating, but I think it has to do with a determination, finally, that new rules have to be set, or old rules have to be reinforced about how the world operates at this level. It's gone out of control, it seems. And it's out of control in a particular way, and it's all about money, people making tons and tons of money by doing very unorthodox and highly risky things, not to themselves, but to the people. The Russian spies and U.S. spies, they don't care about the world. They care about themselves primarily. So this is an interesting development, and also because we see that the move now is beyond the outer ring. It's now coming very close to home within the Trump administration itself. Other people who were previously investigated and even were enticed to plead guilty to whatever charges, they were close to the Trump administration, but they were not in the Trump administration. So this is a very interesting development from that perspective. We'll see. But anyway, this is our time. This is our open forum. I only ask that you kind of make it as compact as possible without sacrificing the intent of your offering today. 888-874-4888 is the number to call. Harvey from Berkeley, haven't heard from you in a while.
No.
You're on the air.
No, thank you. Well, hello, wonderful Utrice and your vast Progressive Radio Network audience.
Thank and, you. And hello to you, too.
Okay. And thanks for all that you're doing to create a better world for us and future generations. And today I'd like to share some new thoughts on gun control. The Trublicans, I always call them Trublicans because they're always creating so much trouble. have passed a party-line vote allowing almost anyone with a gun permit to carry a concealed weapon across state lines. And their vote also allows people from more than a dozen states that require no gun permit to carry concealed weapons across state lines. These guys are all about murder. And at the same time, the media is constantly telling us that there are two major things that kill and injure a lot of people, and they're cars and guns. And the difference between them is that cars are insured, but guns are not. And it turns out that guns are the third leading cause of injury-related deaths in the United States. And there's a nationwide organization called We Are Every Town for Gun Safety. You can find that on the web, We Are Every Town for Gun Safety, which works towards reducing injury and death due to gun violence. And they have an advisory board made up of some of America's most recognized names, and including Warren Buffett, whose company, Berkshire Hathaway, owns one of the country's top automobile insurance companies called Geico Auto Insurance. And I believe that it's time for Mr. Buffett to stand behind his commitment to reduce gun violence by diversifying his insurance company, especially as autonomous self-driving vehicles create less need for auto insurance, and go into the gun insurance business to make up for the coming profit shortfalls on auto insurance. And I would like to see him rename his company Geico Auto and Gun Insurance Company. And gun insurance would be a very good first step in bringing this murderous situation under control.
Well, what about the argument, the counter to the argument you just made, that, well, a person is entitled to safety, let's say it that way, and what is wrong if, a person who is a gun owner takes his gun wherever he goes? It's the American way. What's wrong with that argument?
It's so funny, Utrice, because Here, we pay like about 56 cents out of every dollar to the military-industrial complex to protect us. It's unbelievable the amount of money we spend on the military-industrial complex and in the, and social programs, education, rebuilding the infrastructure, single-payer health care. They all go by the way. They all have to deal with crumbs off the table because we're so paranoid that that we give 56 cents out of every dollar to military industrial complex, and then you get all your local police, you get your Coast Guard, you know, the National Guard, the police. I mean, that's on top of the 56 cents going toward the military industrial complex. So I mean, we just spend unbelievable amounts for this feeling of insecurity. And yet we spend so much for security, and yet we don't feel secure. And so we feel that even we have to carry guns, right? There's more guns in America than there are people, and that's just the legal ones. Never mind all the black market and guns and so on. I mean, it's so crazy. And I think that the media, essentially, that the general media, they make us afraid of each other. It's divide and conquer. We all are suspicious of the other, and the other is everyone else besides us, so that everybody feels a need to own a gun. And also, I saw this thing that the Army, they're getting rid of a lot of the pistols that they had. They're getting new arms, and they're like, I saw this advertisement that they want to, you know, sell to the public. So here, all our tax dollars are going into building up so many guns for the military, and now the military is turning over all those tax-paid guns to the public. And so it's murder and mayhem all the way. It puts our police force in jeopardy. They shoot before, you know, they're afraid of us, and they shoot just like if anybody twitches, they'll shoot them. It's really created a situation where they prey upon us because we are so weak and vulnerable. I mean, essentially, we're just a lot of water supported by bones. Even an armadillo has like a shell that protects him. But we are so fragile that we need to spend so much of our money, time, and we're in such fear of the other. So I think that we have to really look at this over again. And the Republicans, of course, they, you know, by letting everybody, including people, states that have no gun control laws, letting everybody just walk around with guns from state to state. I mean, it's unbelievable what our politicians do. They don't really help us. They, in a sense, sow more fear and panic into the public, and then everybody needs to have a gun. And so many of these guns are used in tragic. You know, they buy a gun to protect their home, and then the kid finds it and shoots grandma. I mean, whatever it is, it's a tragic situation, and it puts us all in jeopardy.
Well, thank you, and you defended your position quite well. Thanks so much for starting us off today, Harvey.
Thank you, Chief.
Jay from New York, you're on the air.
Yes, good afternoon, Chief. How are you?
Okay, how are you doing?
Good. You know, I'd just like to ask you, now that Flynn has decided to plead guilty to a single charge, that basically means he may get little or no jail time at all, what happens with the rest of the crooks? Will we hopefully get Jared some jail time? Will we hopefully get Ivanka some jail time? Will we hopefully get Junior and the other little rascal and the big rascal, Trumpy Trumpster, some jail times? Or, you know, will this all pass away while in the process they just destroyed society by passing this tax bill that for years to come will hurt our children and the future of America for their friends? I mean,
let me ask you to answer your own question. You ask it in a kind of rhetorical way.
Well,
what is the answer?
You know, I know the answer. Oh man, the answer is they all walk. They all walk.
No, you know I don't think, you know,
they all
this
walk.
Is the thing.
You don't think they're going to walk, you trees? They're going to be a sacrificial lamb. Now, I'm hoping, now I'm just going to be honest with you, because I know people that Jared's family has done their thing to because they live in some of his buildings. And he's a real, real nasty guy as far as their real estate go. So I'm hoping that he go to jail and meet up Bubba for a little while. I'm going on record, and I'm going to say that.
We don't know where this is going.
What you have to do is look at the significance of the
plea that they extracted from Flynn, and pay attention to the fact, like I said before, what is significant about him and his plea of guilty is that it now puts the special prosecutor inside the White House. They've been circling and circling and circling around the White House. Flynn is the guy who got them in to the White House because Flynn was an active advisor to the president. And now there is a closeness that they didn't have before, a closeness within the White House. They have a better shot at looking around for their targets, and they have their guy who is going to be used as the pointer dog. Go there and tell us what you know about such. Tell us what you know about such. So he's a very valuable asset, and the most important thing to how you interpret this whole thing, they may or may not catch others, but I doubt that they would go to this length and not look at others in terms of prosecution. But they now have a very powerful tool to use to go after other people inside the White House. This is very key, very key.
Well, you know, you are so correct in that. But, you know, I look at it this way. In all of these scenarios and situations, there has to be a sacrificial lamb. I'm the type of individual, I just want to focus on one, and my focus is going to be Jared. Now, if they get, you know, Donald and some of the others, I'm a happy camper. I'll be real happy.
You have a special interest in Jared. I agree with you in a way that Jared, as the president's son-in-law, the husband of his daughter, it's a very tight circle. And even so, you can see the tentacles through Jared spreading outside of the White House, but also being a White House guy. So this is all the more important to interpret this guilty plea by Flynn. It's going to take us into, it should now open the doors wider, much wider, within the White House. Everybody else that they've been talking about, these are people outside the White House, and they were attached to his campaign, like Manafort. The thing here is that Flynn is connected both to the White House and to Trump's campaign in a very strategic way. So he's a very valuable asset. Let's hope he lives to be that.
And all Utrecht, let me just say this last thing. You used the word that I think I hope didn't pass on people. You just said it a minute ago. I hope he lives. But the last thing is this. Could you please next week bring somebody in to talk about this tax bill that is going to be passed today? Because it's really going to affect a lot of our lives in the present and the future.
The many bills that are under consideration right now and are being pushed They're very complex. I have no way myself of appreciating all of the aspects that are important. So I'm relying on someone who is well-versed in matters of tax law, and we'll see where it goes. But yes.
Have a good one.
It's you too. Thanks, Jay, for calling in. Lincoln from Mount Vernon. My dear Lincoln from Mount Vernon, how are you?
I am doing. I'm doing. I greet you with love because we revolutionists very often forget that part of the ingredient, you know, one great ingredient, love. You know.
Oh, love. I'm looking forward to it.
And we get so passionate that we sometimes want to chew each other's heads off, forgetting that we're all trying to correct the problems.
And we're all trying to understand them. You know what I mean? And I have not really had any hostility from people. You know what I mean? And it's so rare. I can't recall anybody in recent years being so out of control and so wacky that it just negates any possibility of us just talking. So what are we talking about today?
Before I launch into what I would like to say, and this is not a forum for what I... want to say really requires much more than this forum, actually. But I just want to mention this for everyone listening, that they should actually, concerning the scandals, the sexual disclosure scandals, isn't it amazing that everyone who is so passionate about it, women and men, everyone is skirting all the allegations of Bill Clinton, which so far outshines all of the allegations we hear so far, and is sexual and also the possible murderous things. And everyone in the Democratic Party, people who call in, people who are outraged, and the women who are about women's lib, etc., everyone, for some reason, seems like they don't want to bring the Clintons up, especially Bill Clinton.
Why do you think that is, by the way?
Because that's why I say we deserve Trump. Because we are duped and we want to hear what we want to hear. We don't want to hear what is. It's like that song that says, no one can tell me lies like my daddy, my sweet daddy, tell me lies. We all want to hear sweet lies. And we all only embrace symbolic politics, not concrete politics. And it is greatly because we are a result of miseducation. And I'm an original thinker. I've been one since I was a child, and I see the answer to political problems as relates to the people as very, very, very simple. And when I say we are victims of lies, we have been fed mistruths, and eventually these become conventions of truism. And like, for example, the whole thing about economics, which was foisted on us by the conquering Europeans, which occurred really because of gunpowder. And then Adam Smith and all of them, which they're all bogus. Even the so-called economists who even come on WBR, even PRN, they're also miseducated. And I say this because economics is just like religion. And a religion might be very erroneous, but yet, because it has been preached for years, we start accepting it as it is a truth. Like economics, money is not really real. Money is nothing. Our economic system is nothing but little children playing with marbles.
But why is this, in your view, so unusual? This is what has happened from the way the day society began as a society. People are divided loosely into two groups, those who rule and those who are ruled. it stands to reason, not that we agree, but it stands to reason that those who are in power also have the tools available to maintain quiescence among the people that are ruled. And it worked. It has been a great formula. It has worked very, very well for centuries. So why is it so unusual that we still see the effects of that formula today?
Because most people are not individual thinkers. And I'll show you something. You said those who are in power. There is no one in power. There is no one in power. I'll give you a good example. I was in the military in this country, and they court-martialed me twice. The last time they court-martialed me, I said to them, I said to the admirals, etc., I said, I am the one with the power. They said, what do you mean? I said, who carries the weapons? I said, if we decide to defy you, what could you do? If we collectively, you know what they did? They said, send him to the psychiatrist. He's got to be crazy to talk to us like this.
And in a way, I mean, you have to see from their point of view. In a way, they're right. You are crazy. But it takes that level of courage to face an enemy, if you will. And you're dealing now with the business of ideas and who will prevail. And here again, the formula kicks in. You're one guy. They have all these people who they successfully have indoctrinated, who have to obey what they say. You say, no, I'm not doing it. That gives you the distinction of being in an extreme minority. In our society, it works this way. You, as an extreme minority, have no value. And you must be punished simply to object to the formula that you too will go along. And you must, because they have a, quote, rule or a law. They have the ability to incarcerate you for not obeying their rules. So I have to ask, based on this recent example, did you expect anything to be different? I mean, you're going into an artificial society, which is what the military is. It's an artificial society. It has its own arbitrary rules. It is expected that you will obey the rules. Whether you know them or not, you are expected to know them and to obey them. Why would you expect a different reaction from an artificial society created to perform one task, and that is to dominate the rest of the world? That's what you and the others are there to do. So I'm constantly asking you, why would you hold that your view, going into a situation, and you said you're a very powerful and analytical thinker, why would you find yourself in such a situation?
I will answer you like this. We say we need more black police. And when a black police goes into the police, what does he or she expect, especially a black police who wants to make a difference in the system? That's part of my answer to you.
But it's not a good answer, and I'll tell you why.
I think it is. If you listen to what I said,
you are a thinker.
I am juxtaposing the police.
But how could you think that the police force has the high ideals that you do and is compatible with your high ideals? How could you think that?
Okay, let me answer this another way. I've been interested in politics since I was a child, and my reason is because I want to end poverty. I think the answer to politics is real simple. It's not as intellectual as we all think. It's simply design the government to be servants of the people and feed the people. You see, the body work, the government should work just like our body works. The blood...
But again, I keep trying to bridge the gap in your thinking between what you see as the philosophy of what ought to be and what actually is. And you tell things, you give us examples of things in which you're constantly up against something that is organized against you from the start, and yet you expect it to be different. And I wonder how you expect, or why do you expect, that your views, and I agree with your views, they're high-minded views, they are views that come from a different perspective about what government ought to be. But the record shows that although there may be millions of us who think the way you do and the way I do about how government ought to be, the fact is it isn't that way. So is it a matter that we should change our views or be more realistic about the likelihood of success in changing a system that is scientifically organized against just about everything we believe? Or do we say, well, I can't do that, so I'm not going to go there. Instead, I will turn my energy and my thinking and my actions, I would reshape them so that they could be useful in another venue, another scenario.
It's like asking an actor to become a doctor.
Well, you know, I'm asking you this. You are very well versed, and you're highly conversant with the anomalies of life. You have your views of life, and they're good. They're well-intentioned. So I'm asking for a person like you, and there are millions of us, people who are in situations that philosophically we do not agree with at all. We don't agree. But nevertheless, we are there. What then is the challenge for people like us, you and me, and millions of others, who are exactly in that position? What is the practical thing to do?
One of the practical things is if we could be like a Ross Perot, not that I embrace Ross Perot, but use this system, the tools of this system, to enter the system and change the system. So if a group of us could get together and amass billions, I mean so many billions that it's beyond the Bill Gates, etc., and then we use it to try to change the system and re-educate the system. I'll give you a good example. I'm not going to hold you too much longer because this is really not a long enough forum for you and I, especially with your mind, you know. But, okay, the police.
I like how you shift the blame to me, but go ahead.
Let's look at the police. When we think of the police, we think of us against them. You know how I see the police? I see us all as laborers in society, everyone. I see the police as a worker, just like I see the police no different than I see a person working at Walmart, Macy's. I see the police no different than I see a doctor. I see the soldiers no different than a laborer. And if, for example, if I should get into politics, I would go back to Jamaica because I would establish a new party. And what I would do is I would re-educate, say, the police and let them understand that they are workers like everyone else. And if the police and soldiers realize that they are just like the organs of the body, the eye doing its job and the heart doing its job, the toes, the fingers, the kidneys, the spleen, and these different parts, they do not compete with each other. And if we did approach life like that and educate the people like that, then the people would respond differently, because then the police would realize that they are, the government without them has no power. And if the police understood themselves as civilians, then they would not work against the interest of the people. So it comes back to being miseducated on a large scale, and the miseducation keeps going on and on and on. And we find it so easy to go along with the indoctrination. And so I think the major part of it is re-education, a re-education with a real definite purpose, not just some ethereal re-education, not something, you know, vacuous like change and hope. Because when these, like for example, these politicians, when they come, they tell you about change and hope. And these people are so gullible. They follow these things. And instead of, hey, how are you going to end poverty? When they tell you about the middle class. And even this thing about the middle class, you have to fortify the middle class. If you go to an emergency room, who do you deal with first? You deal with the most immediate case, the person who's dying. And the first person they should deal with in this society is the abject poor, not no middle class. You need to, because the abject poor is the emergency situation. So when Obama and all these people and Clinton come to you with these flowery words about middle class, it's because they are bogus and they have nothing else to say but regurgitate the lies and the stupidity they were taught at Harvard and Yale and all the other schools. And we need to wake up to that reality, you know?
Well, I think you're right there. But I don't know that you're seeing or addressing the bigger picture of the organization, the organizational structure of our society, the societies that we live in. It's not that these politicians are bogus. It is natural to see how the vast majority of them will be bogus, because being bogus is required to function successfully as a politician. You cannot be an honest politician. Those words just don't go together. The vast majority of politicians agree. Tacitly or explicitly, they agree to come into the fold, to adopt the thinking, the beliefs, the actions of the dominating structure that they elect to be part of. There are societies still in the world where people understand these concepts the way you have posited them today, where police understand their role as helpers, as protectors, but not as a negative force in a community. There are such places, but they function within the larger structure of governments that understand their role differently. They do not see their role, for example, the police in Cuba. The police in many other countries, they understand their role. And to the best of their ability, they are in step with the larger philosophy of the country. So the police can't change in and of themselves. They are part of, they are a department of the larger picture, and they function accordingly. So what you are saying, in fact, is that an overhaul of large systems is necessary, because right, they're not seeing the picture. And the philosophy, economic, political, social philosophies that they follow are not primarily in the interest first of people, placing people's interests first. They have a devotion to other things, money, profit, exploitation of other people. These are the things that they place first. This is why the United States has such a huge military budget, and it's never enough. The whole idea, we do not have a need right now, but the philosophy drives them to have more and more and more weapons to kill more and more and more people. That is just a standard philosophy. So a person going into the military, if a person going into the military doesn't get that, it means that the person is undereducated about the system he or she is about to join. And therefore, the person has decisions at the outset to make. Am I compatible with this? Do I want to be compatible with this? Or do I use my energies and my talents elsewhere? This is a fundamental decision. I have never worked in mainstream media. I don't want to. I've never, ever worked in mainstream media. That was my early decision, that my journalistic talents, such as they are, should be used in a different way, and therefore in a different venue. And when that venue was not even immediately available, I created one. I started a news service dedicated to news about people, for people, in urban areas and so forth, when I was 24. So you start thinking early about what is your calling and how do you eradicate from the word go as many obstacles to your calling as possible. You don't go into a situation and then get mad and say, well, it has to change. No, you have to change. You have to construct systems that are compatible with your own philosophy, that allow you to be contented in your life. You wouldn't be rich, but you would be performing meaningful work. And that is the decision most people should make, because most people I know are terribly unhappy about what they're doing. But they are on that wheel. They got to show up for work, and they got to call people to collect money that they don't have, or they have to, you know, they have to do unpleasant things. But that's what's called for. And it seems to me we should be investing a lot more thinking at the outset. People will have all kinds of comments and so forth. These things don't bother me. I made a decision that I am not going to work in major media. I never have, ever, and won't ever. So that's my one commitment to myself that I actually made real. So there you go. You made a decision, however you made it. And it's not to be, you know, no fingers of blame pointing at you here. Because this is where inevitably most of us come to. We have to make a decision, a fundamental decision about what we do. And is it compatible with what we think, with who we are? And if we make the slightest concession and contradict what I would say is a spiritual commitment to ourselves, we make this fundamental decision at some point in our lives. And it's not only about work. It's about who you choose to marry or who you choose to live with or, you know, where you choose to live. All these, it comes to the same thing. You have to, from the outset, seriously decide, make a commitment as to where you want to be, where you want to fit, and what is most important to you in that decision. I made a decision because it would make me happy and make me feel that I'm doing something worthwhile. It would give me a sense of value about myself. That was my decision. That's what informed my decision. And I think at some point, people have to take a look at that. What do you really want to do? Never mind, you know, all these other things about how much money you need to make and so forth. These are natural considerations. But the most important consideration, it seems to me, is what you do compatible with who you are? There we go. Great talking to you, Lincoln, as usual. And really, okay, you raise very profound thoughts.
And I'm so glad about your taxi driver experience.
What?
I still reminisce on your taxi driver experience. You know, that one you narrated to us when you commandeered that cab.
That's right. He wasn't doing what he was supposed to do, and I was not about to die because somebody didn't know what he was doing.
Yeah. So but to be continued.
I'll drive myself home.
Yeah. Okay, have a wonderful.
You too. Right here, we'll take a break and come back to your thoughts right after this. The number is 888-874-4888, and we are doing the most valuable and important thing in our lives, and that is we're talking to each other. See you soon.
Hey, y'all, tell everybody, Ray Charles in town. I got a dollar and a quarter, and I'm just raying the clown. But don't let no female play me cheap. I got 50 cents more than I'm gonna keep. So let the good time roll now. I tell y'all I'm gonna let the good time roll. Well, it don't make no difference if you're young or old. All you got to do is get together and let the good time roll.
You're listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM. I'm Eutrice Lead, and it is Free Your Mind Friday. What are you freeing your mind of today? Let's know at 888-874-4888. It's most important that we develop a sense of comfort in expressing ourselves. And it is not required what it is you believe you should think this way or think that way. I am just contented with the idea that we should think. Whatever you want to think, think. And invest a lot of energy into that, a lot of purpose into that. Bill from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, Eutrice, and a happy holiday season to you and all of your listeners.
Thank you, and the same to you.
Thank you so much. I haven't called for a while, but I just want to thank you so much for all that you do, which is amazing. And I agree with you on 99.75% of everything you say. And your music selections are amazing. And were you ever involved in jazz, or I mean, are you just a music aficionado? I mean, you're just amazing.
I'm just an aficionado, but it started early in my life. My father owned a movie theater, and one of the movies that I saw was America by Night.
All right,
and it was all about, you know, performances and jazz clubs and so forth. It was fantastic, and then came Cinderella.
Okay.
With Jerry Lewis.
Yes.
And there was this grand scene where he's entering the ballroom.
All right.
And the Count Basie Orchestra is playing. And that was it for me. Jazz was for me.
Well, I tell you, I look forward to your selections each day that I listen to you. And a couple days ago, you had an amazing selection by Della Reese that was it was right on time. And, you know, with everything that's been going on, Sometimes you need a little bit of that good old-fashioned sort of hard-driving gospel music just to sort of uplift you and let you know that it's going to be all right and that, you know, we've been through worse before and somehow we will prevail and get over this. And on that point, I think it was yesterday or the day before you had the psychologist gentleman on who was excellent. And thank you so much. That was the most insightful, on-point analysis of Donald J. Trump in terms of his psychological malaise and problems that is so clear and evident. And it was unbiased, and it was the most amazing thing. It was very prescient in that this was done before this fellow came.
I shared it. Yes, yes. What stood out to you in mm-hmm. that discourse as being so insightful and so illuminating?
Yes.
About the psychological makeup of this man. And yes, the mm-hmm. the thing that struck me too, and this is why I shared it, this was before
That's right.
he entered the White House.
Yes. And what really struck me was more than Trump himself, it's the people who follow him. And the gentleman explained that this is, and he wasn't being, you know, disparaging in a negative way, but he was being very professional. He was saying that this is the same kind of following that people like Adolf Hitler and Mussolini had, when you had them, you know, these characters come out and give these stirring, rousing talks that just drive and fuel their base. And he played the clip with the CNN. I forget the lady's name, in which she was questioning him about his attitudes towards women, and just the
yes.
sound of the crowd when he responded to that, saying that he wasn't about being politically correct, and this roaring applause. I mean, that was just quite frightening, to tell you the truth, because that is the soul of his base, and I don't know if there's any way to change that, but it's about recognizing that and knowing kind of what we're dealing with.
I think so. I thought it was very, very instructive. This is Dr. Burgo.
Yes.
And he just laid it out as a clinician, you know, not making any judgment, political judgments. He just
yes.
laid it out as a mm-hmm. clinician. This is what he would see in anybody, you know, but the subject was Donald Trump.
That's right.
And he talked about the background of a fractured family home situation
mm-hmm.
and how that might have affected him and so forth. So I thought it was really instructive, the what he presented, but it also allowed me to remember,
okay.
to think about, mm-hmm. we should always find a way to get some glimpse or to pay attention to the clues that we're getting about mm-hmm. what's going on in any candidate's mind.
Absolutely.
You know, because you have some people, they look pretty good. And then every now and then something slips by and we don't react to it, but we are reminded, even in a small millisecond, oops,
yes.
that doesn't sound right. That
absolutely. And there's so much that hasn't sound right. And this is what has been in our face. We've known it as a nation, as individuals throughout, about Donald J. Trump. And now we are living through it. And there are things that are developing. And my fear is this man is more and more under pressure, and he's going to be more volatile as the heat gets turned up under him and his staff and former staff. Who are under the scrutiny of prosecutors, and also his saber rattling with the Korean and North Korean leader there, who he so much hates. But the one last thing is also about the doctor explained about his intense hatred for Donald Trump and anyone that challenges him. I thought was also right on point. And just to close, thank you again for sharing that. I know it was a long clip, but I do appreciate it. I'm sure many others did as well.
Thank you so much. I really love that. Thank you.
You're very welcome. Take care.
Take care. Well, we have only 5 minutes, about 4 minutes actually, left. And in those minutes, I'd like to take the opportunity to say to you, to say to us all, that we sometimes are so hard on ourselves that we should know this and we should know that. That's not the way human beings were made. We are bundles of mistakes and pitfalls and all that other kind of stuff. But what counters all of that is a fundamental belief that we are good people. We're good people. We don't mean to cut anybody up and shred anybody to bits. That's not what we're here for. We're here really to make a tangible difference. And sometimes it's not for a community. Sometimes it starts with the commitment we make to ourselves. And we should honor that. Your commitment to yourself. It's riddled with all kinds of, contradictions and all of that. But that's okay, because that's what makes us human. But fundamentally, we should strive to be good people. Good people. Even when we encounter really bad things and even evil people, it should not change us. Because I strongly believe that the good parts of ourselves are our essential selves. That's where we shine. We have all these different ways that we do or could. And it should remain protected. You know, we shouldn't easily give in. Because if you're good at your core, it is the most beautiful, the most brilliant, the most precious part of ourselves. It is our original self, if you could say. Yeah, we flounder and we do stupid things and we are wrong a lot. But that does not contradict in any way the fact that essentially we try to be good. And we need that feeling more than ever in this administration. Have yourselves a great weekend, and we'll see each other on Monday. Thank you so much for listening and for your incredible contributions to the program. Bye-bye.